Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
But more optimistically, let's go for real.
There you go. All right. Sorry, that was me whacking the mic.
Are you ready to go?
I was ready, and then I scooted my chair in, and then it just all went to, oh, God. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. You can hear the engineers going, oh, what are you doing?
It's like, why can't y'all use microphones like professionals? I am Kimberly Adams. It is Thursday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, of course. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, we're going to do a little news, then we'll do smile thing, and then we will let you all be on your way about your day. Let's go. Yours are more serious than mine, actually. Actually, they're all serious.
Yeah.
But yours are more relevant, more topical, more immediate. How about that?
Sure. I mean, mine are both very Washington-focused. So first of all, today, a jury here in Washington convicted four members of the Proud Boys of seditious conspiracy. Now, that this is, of course, linked to January 6th, the Proud Boys were this far-right militia group that, you know, really led some of the most violent acts on January 6th and were quite organized, and there's a lot of documentation showing that they clearly had a plan to try to take over the government and, you know, stand in the way of the election. And seditious conspiracy is a very, very serious charge. This dates back to the Civil War, and these verdicts can bring them up to 20 years in prison. They're also have been convicted of many, many other felonies, convicted of conspiring to impede Congress from performing its duties, obstructing law enforcement during a civil disorder. There's a mistrial on a couple of counts after jurors couldn't reach consensus, and then one person, I think, was acquitted because they weren't quite a leader. But, you know, it's a good moment to check in on the fact that more than 600 people related to the Capitol rampage, as Reuters calls it, have been convicted of crimes related to the attack on the Capitol. And people are doing real time for this. And as they should, five people died during or shortly after the riot. More than 140 police officers were injured. And these Proud Boys were really some of the more violent folks there. And, you know, they're planning to appeal. They've, you know, a lot of them are claiming that they are being scapegoated for Trump since Trump has not been held liable for this yet. But it's just, you know, worth noting that these cases are still ongoing. People are still being convicted, and we are still learning more about just how bad that day was. Yes. So that's one.
I toyed briefly. So first of all, yay, right? I don't think I'm betraying any impartiality there by saying yay, the people who attacked the Capitol or led attacks on the Capitol have been convicted. I toyed briefly with making this my Make Me Smile because it kind of put a smile on my face. I don't know what to tell you. And I realized that would have violated the whole concept of the Make Me Smile, but wow, this is, I mean, you can't.
Justice served does feel good.
Right.
It takes
exactly.
a while.
Exactly.
I mean, this more than 2 years later. It's never going to help the families of the people who died, or, you know, some of those officers, you know, aren't able to work anymore who were injured. And But, you know, something is being done. Right. So, sure. Right. You know what? Why not? You're allowed to smile about that. Number two, another political story here in Washington, but also a big money story. More and more developments every day about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and just all of the money and resources and gifts that he has been getting from this really, really wealthy conservative donor. Today, there was reporting out that he also had one of his relatives, who I guess was his adopted, you know, basically he treated him like a son. Mm-hmm. You know, Harlan Crow paid for this young man's boarding school to the tune of many, many thousands of dollars. And just as a reminder, this, you know, very wealthy man is also like owns the house that Clarence Thomas's mother lives in for, I guess, no rent. And I linked in the show notes to a Vox story about this, which goes over a lot of the reporting from ProPublica about just the extent of the, you know, ethical awfulness going on here. But it also has some solutions, right? If you scroll towards the bottom of the article, you know, it says there are better ways to design a judiciary and brings up a couple of different models of different ways that this could be done, because right now there's no accountability for this. Mm-hmm. Congress can't really do anything. Other courts can't really do anything because the Supreme Court is the highest court in the land. They are effectively accountable to no one. And in a democracy, there should be no one who is accountable to no one, right? And so they list a couple of other models. So in the British system, I'm just going to read here. The British system, for example, Supreme Court justices are selected by a commission consisting of the court's current president, a senior member of the judiciary, and representatives from local judicial selection commissions in England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. There, the Lord Chancellor has a single-use veto that they can use to reject the first choice, but if they use that power, they can't block the second choice. Similarly, U.S. states use a system called the Missouri Plan, which of course means I love it more, and under that process, there's a... It took a second, but I'll take it. A seven-person commission that includes three lawyers elected by the lawyers of the Missouri Bar, three citizens selected by the governor, the chief justice who serves as chair. When a vacancy opens on the state Supreme Court, the commission selects three names and forwards them to whoever the state governor is at the time, who must then choose from one of those three candidates within 60 days, or the commission makes the final decision. Basically spreading out the decision-making for these very important roles rather than it just being a purely partisan decision by a single administration. And I think, like, now, will we end up in a situation where anytime soon we're seriously revamping the Supreme Court? It's very unlikely given the political situation here in Washington. But it is worth noting that there are better ways to do this that at least provides some accountability. So that's my rant.
And it's a good rant, and I associate myself with everything you have said. The thing I legit don't understand about this is that it is okay for the Supreme Court to declare an act of Congress unconstitutional, but it's not okay for the Congress to apply any kind of oversight to the court. Now, yes, the Senate does have advice and consent on nominations, and the Congress can control the size of the court. It can control some of the cases. It can control the inferior courts and how many of them there are. But I don't get, to your point about nobody should be unaccountable, I don't get how there's no congressional oversight on this one. I don't get it.
You know, it's funny. It's like the founding fathers got the balances part on this one right, but not the checks.
Right. But not the checks. Right.
It was supposed to be checks and balances, but it's only like the balance part because there's you know, balance on the front end of who goes into the court and the structure of the court, but no check on the court at all.
Right, and this. And this idea that they hold their term of service during good behavior, right, which has come to mean lifetime appointments, means that once they're in the door, that's it. See you later. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, mine are sort of brief, actually. One of them, I just want to point out that not a day after we did the episode on child labor with the reporter from the New York Times on Tuesday, here we go with McDonald's, a franchisee being fined for illegally using workers as young as 10, keeping them working till late in the evening. And are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Two 10-year-olds are among 300 children who worked at McDonald's restaurants illegally, a Labor Department investigation of franchisees in Kentucky found. What? Just what? Just what? So there's that item. Item number two. So I was having a conversation with Nancy Fargali, the executive producer of Marketplace this morning, and we were talking about, I don't even know what we were talking about. And we got to talking about this trip that we took to Washington last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I forget, frankly. Did a bunch of interviews, whatever. And we each remarked that masks on airplanes now are basically gone. Like, as recently as a month ago, I was wearing a mask on a plane. But this time, I didn't. And she wore her mask only a little bit. And by and large, masks are gone on planes. Which made this item that I heard, and maybe some of you all have heard this too, since you're probably public radio fans, but Rob Stein on the NPR newscast throughout the day has been pointing out these new numbers from the CDC, pointing that COVID is now the fourth leading cause of death in the United States, as opposed to the third leading cause of death. And we point out, not infrequently on this podcast, that the pandemic, while largely forgotten in people's minds, is actually not over. And I just want to bring this point up in this CDC report. 500 people a week are dying from COVID. 250,000 people last year. 224,000 people died from COVID. So, and this is more as a memo to myself than anything else. While we have decided we're done with COVID, COVID is not done with us. And that's, we just need to remember that.
Yeah, that's wild. It's, I got an email yesterday from someone who I ran into when I was in St. Louis last week to let me know that they tested positive for COVID and came, you know, like, oh, we were hanging out and tested positive for COVID. And, you know, so I notified my mom and, you know, we're going to test and all those things and it's fine. We didn't test positive. But that is the first time in a very long time that I have been extended that courtesy, you know, of somebody letting me know that they were sick who actually knew that they were sick. Like, I still, when I feel sick, I test for COVID first, you know, just in case. But a lot of people, when they feel sick, they're just not testing anymore. I still wear a mask on planes. I wear masks on public transportation. I wear a mask if I'm taking like a rideshare service. Sometimes I wear it in the grocery store, but not always. Definitely when I go into the pharmacy, it's full of sick people. And I think that's probably going to be my MO for the foreseeable future. I don't imagine
that is smart
dialing
prudent.
Back anymore from that.
It's just people are still dying. That's
but I definitely go to restaurants and to crowded places that are probably way more risky than, you know, the metro and don't wear a mask. So it's sort of like, what did we call it? Sanitation theater?
Right.
Yeah, like security theater.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
All right,
Drew. Was it Drew? I don't even know if it's true. I think it's true. Yes. All right, it's true. Okay.
You go first.
So this weekend is the Kentucky Derby, and let's just stipulate here that there are real challenges in horse racing right now. There are over-medications. There are horses that are dying, and that is in and of itself a tragedy. But the Kentucky Derby is happening this weekend, and it is the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's season where he won the Triple Crown with records that have yet to be broken 50 years later, including some ginormous win at the Kentucky Derby. I don't remember by exactly how many lengths. Anyway, in The Athletic today, which you can read if you have a subscription in the New York Times, and which we'll put on the show page. I don't know. Maybe I can arrange a gift subscription or something. Anyway, there's a so Secretariat, after he won, was retired and put out to stud. And he had 663 foals, or, children, but foals, right? Of which only two are still alive. There's a story in The Athletic today about the daughter. She's 34 years old, and she is living in retirement in I don't even know where. It's a great, great, great little story about this horse and what her life is like and the history, and it's just cool. I just really liked it, and it gave me a little smile, and that's it. That's what I got. Her name is Trusted Company, by the way.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's really
and I
cool.
love that she's like all shaggy and stuff because she's just chill in retirement and out in the field and just like, I'm going to get to see a bunch of thoroughbreds this weekend because I'm going to a steeplechase with some friends.
Oh, it's what's wild to me is so I've been to one actually out in like Virginia horse country where
that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going. Yeah.
Super cool. Great to have done once for a whole lot of reasons. But the it's so loud, man. Those horses come around the corner and the earth shakes.
Wild. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. It's also like terrifying to watch. Like anybody who's seen National Velvet, that's what we're talking about with the steeplechase. And like, Those barriers are huge, and like, and these horses are big horses. But you see them going, and it's like, oh, there's a brick wall with some bushes and a little pond that you have to just go over, like no big deal. And you know, it was funny. Drew was posting about all the fun hats that are going to be seen this weekend at the Kentucky Derby and at the coronation. There was somebody who tweeted,
"Oh my lord, yes, that's
the
right.
coronation and the Kentucky Derby are both May 6th. What a wonderful day for big stupid hats!" And I am here to say that yes, I will be wearing a big stupid hat on Saturday and loving it.
There you go, perfect, perfect. All right, what do you got?
Okay, I've got two. I couldn't go without, you know, a May the 4th related story.
Of course.
It's Star Wars Day. You know, I am who I am, and I embrace that part of myself.
Totally.
There is a hilarious story in Polygon, which is sort of like this gaming news outlet, and I'm trying to redeem myself for not knowing what games Activision Blizzard had. Yesterday. So anyway, Polygon has this story about a new Star Wars game, which is Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which apparently finally takes us to a Star Wars bathroom. Because apparently... In all the Star Wars franchises, you rarely, if ever... see what the inside of a bathroom looks like. So this is a little sample. Granted, it isn't the first Star Wars bathroom ever depicted. That honor weirdly might go to the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge theme park, where the bathrooms are in character. And Andor also kind of showed us Star Wars bathrooms, but they were also basically prison cans, Spartan, functional, not big on privacy. Similarly, the Razor in The Razor Crest, Din Djarin's ship in season one of The Mandalorian, had a head for his long-haul trips that's possible to spot in the background of the first episodes. However, the bathrooms in Jedi Survivor are the real deal and probably a possibly a somewhat scummy representation of how most folks go in the Star Wars universe. And there are many, many photos of the bathroom in a sort of skeezy bar in this game. Which made me chuckle and smile, and it was wonderful. Oops, and now I hit the mic. It's our day for this.
There you go.
Okay.
There
my
you
other
go.
One my other one is a little bit more earth-based, and it is a in popular science, a guide to all the cool stuff that you can see in the night sky in May, including meteors, flower moons, and meteor showers. There's gonna be a penumbral lunar eclipse this weekend. There's going to be an Aquarius meteor shower this weekend. There's a bunch of cool moon things happening. And then Mercury at greatest western elongation on May 29th. And so there's lots of details on how to see all those things. So I thought that was kind of fun too. That's
I'm
all I got.
Have to look that up, the western elongation.
Oh, I can tell you a little bit about it real quick. It says,
go ahead.
This is... the planet Mercury will reach its greatest separation from the sun in late May and into June. It may be difficult to see from the United States, but it's expected to reach this point in the pre-dawn hours beginning on May 29th. So there we go.
Excellent. And now we know. Now we know. With that, we're out of here. We're done. Back tomorrow, Economics on Tap. It's a Friday. YouTube live stream included. Let me say that again. The YouTube live stream will be included. Woo! So, you know, you're committed now, oh, social team. We'll do the news. We'll have some drinks. We'll play half full, half empty as well.
Yes. And if you've got a question, comment, or a suggestion for the show, you know what to do. We're at 508-UB-SMART or makemesmart@marketplace.org.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Drew Jostad. Our intern is Antonia Barreras.
Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
Excellent.
Maybe I should wear my big hat to the live stream.
Got to move.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.